It's Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. Welcome. Monday, Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology. Friday, whatever I want to talk about, which sometimes does involve apologetics and theology. Recently, I was a guest on the Avoiding Babylon podcast. It's a great podcast. The hosts are a lot of fun. Anthony is a hoot. And they also had Joshua Charles on. He's been doing a lot of great work with Catholic apologetics on social media, especially on Twitter. He has a new apostolate he's launching. So the four of us got together, just have a really nice chat about online Catholicism, Gen Z, understanding them, understanding how to reach out to online Catholic culture. It was just a nice period just to hang out and chat about things. I love those kinds of formats and environments. I really don't enjoy going on shows where it's a really dry sort of interview, where it's question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. If I can be on a show where it feels like I'm just having a chat, that's why I enjoy Pints. I enjoy going on Avoiding Babylon. It's a lot of fun. So I think you'll get a lot out of hearing our conversation that I have with them to share here with you today on the podcast. So without further ado, here is my chat on Avoiding Babylon, on how to reach out to online Catholic culture and understand Gen Z.
Well, I think all of us are, I think we're all like millennials around like late 30s.
I'm on the older side. You guys are definitely on the younger side.
Yeah, not too much. I'll be 40 in January. So like,
wow.
It'll be, you know, it's, but us, the millennials, we remember coming of age when the internet was an ancillary thing. Like you and I were talking before the show, the iPhone came out in 2007. Like that was when I graduated college, undergrad. Yeah. Like before that point, you had a life and relation, that formative time when you're late teen, early adults, you're trying to, and that's a big time, like figure out your identity. Like, who am I? But now you got people that they're doing that and they're just plugged in 24/7 in the internet. I really worry about what the internet's, what it does to people for their sense of self-identity.
Well, this is kind of why I try to have conversations with people that you don't normally see having conversations, because I noticed that people start branching off into their corner, and then it's like, it's a weird thing. It's like, who was I just talking? I was like, I was talking to Enoch about it. He's like, you know, you're going to have a conversation with Trent Horn, and that means like Trent Horn's fans are now allowed to watch your show. It's a weird thing where, because we're having a conversation now, people will go, oh, Anthony's not so trad. You know, it's such a strange time to be Catholic. Like I'm even looking in the comments and somebody's like, Nick Fuentes is a false Vatican II traditionalist. People really get broken off into these groups, and I just see everybody fracturing apart and just getting spread further apart. And I kind of want to draw people into each other to keep these conversations going.
Yeah. No, I think that's great.
Josh, what's going on with Eternal Christendom?
Oh, well, this was a huge topic with the young converts. We can talk about that in a little bit.
Well, I don't know if you were pretty
quiet. Well, I'm curious what more of what Trent has seen with the Ortho Bros and Anthony mentioning that some of them don't even go to Divine Liturgy. Have you seen... Because I have a men's group I host weekly of just Catholic buddies of mine, and it's been really edifying. But you know, I'd say probably half of them are Gen Z, and the other I'd say maybe a smaller bit are millennial, and then we've got two or three guys in their early and mid 50s. Mm-hmm. And so it's a pretty good generational spread. It's a lot of wisdom and whatnot being transferred, but it's very interesting to talk with the Gen Z guys. So I would like to hear more of Trent's thoughts on that first, and then maybe, well, I can offer some of my observations.
I don't know. I think Gen Z, the ones that are committed, like I feel like Gen Z wants to go really full blast on things when they're into something. So I've noticed that like people who are Gen Z, they're especially if they're online and they identify as Catholic or Orthodox, like they really, and I felt this when I talked to Redeemed Zoomer, and we were talking a bit about this stuff, including when I was driving him back to his dorm, about how that they love theological minutiae, and they don't want the baby catechism stuff. They really love debating and talking about the eclectic, the higher level. So they get into the intricacies. And my concern is that they might be so focused on the minutiae that they miss like the kerygma, that they miss the most important foundational elements. And then if you spend a lot of time online, I thought about doing an episode soon about how the internet is killing us. Just all the different things it does. It shortens our attention span. It's like, I feel guilty doing a podcast and YouTube channel. I don't want to be harming people. But, well, one of the things is like, for example, with some of these Gen Zers, there's a thing called irony poisoning, like a lot of Gen Z humor tends to be very meta and ironic.
Yeah.
So like, for example, like Gen Z will post a minion saying something really cheesy. And it's not the meme that they laugh about. They laugh about the meta fact that a boomer would just find that funny. So like Gen Z humor is more about like someone, it's like that point where someone tells a joke and it's gone on too long, where it's on the border between being uncomfortable and funny again. And so
I see, I kind of like that though. It's weird.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we were in our Telegram chat for Meaning a Catholic, something came up where, Dan Burke used to run EWTN, asked, he was referencing a Father Ripperger talk where he talks about how the trads, like a lot of trad priests realize that a lot of trad men struggle with pornography. And he said it's something to do with like the sin of pride. Right. So then he asked about, are Gen Z, is the trad movement have a lot of pride in it? And yeah, probably, obviously, right? But I think there's a level of it where it has to do with this Gen Z. These are people who just came into the faith and they're discovering tradition and they're excited about it and they have this sense of humor you're talking about. So everything is like an own or a shot.
Well, that's what I was saying about irony poisoning. So they'll share memes, like a meme that says something like an ironic Deus Vult or a Groiper meme or something that is offensive or absurd, not even politically incorrect or even beyond that, like just straight up offensive, but they'll say, oh, well, I'm just being ironic when I share this. And it's funny because it's an irony, but the problem is the more and more you share those kinds of things that you meant it in an ironic sense of humor, that you slowly start to actually be poisoned by it. And it changes your baseline feeling on the issue. Whereas you might think it's funny to post something uber ridiculous trad that's nonsensical. The more and more you post it as ironic humor, it actually starts to poison you and you turn into the very thing that you were making fun of.
If I could make one brief comment, not related, but hey, Trent, my sister, Nancy Charles, is in the stream. She is a recent convert. She came in September 29th last year and she adores you.
Oh, and thank you. That's very
she
kind.
Had a life of, and there's still struggles with same-sex attraction and drugs. And I mean, it was a work of God and Our Lady and she just admires the heck out of you. So just, and there's guys in my men's group as well who just adore you as well. So she didn't ask me to do this, but I wanted to say a brief hello to Nancy.
Oh, Nancy, thank you for your kind words and praise be to God for everything, every way he's used to draw you closer to him. So that makes me very glad to hear.
So I'm friends with this guy, Antonius, I think his name is, but I think he's one of the funniest people I've ever seen on Twitter. And he constantly goes after Americans who become Orthodox or even Byzantine Catholics. And he calls them, he calls it Byzantianity. And he goes, stop LARPing with your Byzantianity. He goes, Western Orthodoxy is like transgenderism, but he's just being like trying to poke the bear a little bit and make fun of the ortho bros a little bit. But I guess you're kind of right. Like, I've been desensitized so much that it's almost like I think it can be dangerous. I think you're kind of right about that, right? You joke around so much that it's your sense of even the sacred could get dulled and you don't realize when you're profaning something, I think.
Well, one comment I'll make is, I'm a weird Catholic now, and I have been for 5 years. So I have one of these on my desk, a Memento Mori. Yeah. And, I kind of started going full time doing more apologetics, evangelism stuff, particularly with church fathers on X last June. And I was kind of doing a testing period for myself. I wanted to see if I could maintain some civility. Doesn't mean everybody agrees with me. Doesn't mean I always word things perfectly. And I think it's come through, but the reason I bring up the Memento Mori is since becoming Catholic, I'll say that one of the things I do think about a lot more is the Day of Judgment. And there's very, very sobering verse from our Lord about we'll have to answer for every careless word. And Trent, I think you model this very, very well for people. I'm a firm believer in being direct, very direct. But I think what a lot of people have to consider is that we will be held accountable for every word.
You know what's funny? That's why about like 8 months ago, maybe it's been a year, I don't know, I started scripting all of my podcasts.
Yeah.
I mean, I can speak extemporaneously. I do that in debates. I do it in talks, and that's fine. But I started scripting them because I wanted to be judicious and respectful of people's time. Like, yeah, I'll watch episodes of people doing a podcast where they ramble, and like I can cover in 20 minutes what would take them an hour. You know, it's just get to the point. And I mean, it's the same. If I just spoke random, like off top of my head on something, it would take me two or three times as long. But also in scripting it reduces the temptation. And a lot of people who get into streaming and doing that stuff, you turn on your camera and you start talking and pontificating, you got a lot more opportunities for those careless words to show up.
Yeah. Well, there was a book I read years and years ago called Amusing Ourselves to Death. Have you read that, Trent?
Neil Postman. Yes.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing book. He published it in 1985, and he, he was kind of commenting in the introduction that they had just passed 1984, you know, which was the eponymous title of George Orwell's book.
Right.
And you know, kind of everybody was celebrating. We hadn't fallen into this dystopian hellhole and whatnot. But he was pointing out that electronic media had really dumbed us down. And he was pointing this out in religion, education, and politics. And I read this book when I was 19. So the same year that
and he's also talking in 1985 about just TV at this point. Really.
Oh, yeah. This is before internet, before smartphones. I read this the year the iPhone came out. And like Trent said earlier, I am every day that goes by, I am more and more thankful. I mean, I played outside with friends. We built tree houses. We dug for dinosaur bones, as silly as that is looking back on it. You know, we were out and about riding bikes. I think we were the last.
Yeah.
I hope not the last, but at least for now, I'd say the most recent generation that probably had a lot of time spent that way as a kid.
Well, you want, you want to know something though? There. Okay. So your average young kid does.
Well, can I finish the comment?
Oh yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A dear mentor of mine, my closest mentor, we met when I was 14. He was my choir teacher, and he's at the same high school. And so he has seen the progression. So when he says, Josh, he was telling me even before COVID, he's like, Josh, I'm telling you, there is something very, very different about this generation. And I'm very devil's advocate. I'm devil's advocate with myself. Every time people are challenging me with questions, like I promise them, I've challenged myself with harder questions than they have. It's part of my going to law school, I guess. But so I will push him. I'll be like, are you sure it's not just old guy complaining about young guy symptom? And he's a very discerning guy, very wise man, very, very relational. He's not curmudgeonly at all. And so he's like, no, I'm telling you, it's very, my mom has said similar things. She's at the middle school level. He's at the high school level. And, he was saying there was a student committee at my high school that was begging, this was right before COVID, was begging the teachers to take away their phones because they were saying, we are absolutely and completely addicted to these things, to the point where, you know, they would take their phone, put it in some cubby at the entrance to the classroom and class started. But even that wasn't working because they would be constantly, you know, looking at the cubby to see if they could see light reflecting on the inner part of the cubby if some notification had come through. And so that was one instance. And then I don't know the exact number, so I'm not going to, I'm not going to be like a dictionary here, but my high school, when I was there for 4 years, this is 2002 to 2006, zero suicides, at least as far as I'm aware. And I asked him, I was like, do you remember any suicides? He's like, none. Let's just say there are multiple suicides almost every year at my high school now. And so he said, kids don't hang out as much. And, you know, I'm glad that apparently kids aren't fornicating as much either. I'm glad about that for sure. But many of the reasons they're not fornicating are probably not the best
now,
either.
But
they're
now it's
fornicating
like,
with porn and whatnot.
It's like 20% identify as like LGBT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it is. Yeah. Whereas when we went to high school, there were people who identified that way, but it was within the standard like general survey of people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 1% or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas now, like, I don't know. I do think, Anthony, like people, the Gen Zers, I think what's happening now is the young people always have a rebellious streak to them, and being a traditional Catholic or Orthodox, that's a subversive reactionary thing.
Yeah.
That's a way to rebel in the world today. And which is good as long as your identity is not solely in, I like rebelling this way. Yeah. I like using this to own people.
That's a great point.
But you even have the young guys who are like, Pope Francis is the most based Pope ever. Like that crowd, like there are young guys that do that. I'm telling you, like you look at like the Orca Kid and Modern Boethius, like those guys are all like 17, 18 years old.
Are they really?
They're young
they're
guys.
That young?
They're that young, oh, 17, man. 18 years old.
I didn't know that. Wow.
And look, they just learned their faith and it's like, they are just gung ho for it. And they're like, Pope Francis is the man and we're going to take back the world under Catholicism. And you know that these are guys of goodwill, right? These aren't progressive Catholics. These are guys who believe the faith, want to, you know, hold to the traditions of the church. They're just like, Francis is the Pope and I'm going. And that's a respectable position. It's just a weird thing. Like you're saying with this generation, it's like whatever they do, they're doing it 1,000 miles per hour.
Full blast, yeah.
They're full blast and they're just going hammering down.
But I think part of that phenomena, like, look, we should honor the Pope, of course. But that doesn't prevent us. I just did a book with a colleague, Persecuted from Within, How the Saints Endured Crises in the Church. And we outlined some historical cases where some saints had some extraordinarily respectful but direct criticisms of popes. So it's possible. And there are limits. But I'd say some of that phenomena is related to a hunger for authority. Because the way most, even our generation, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but most of my friends, I'd say probably 50% of my friends have divorced millennial friends have divorced parents. It may be a lower amount in the general population, but I grew up in, you know, relatively wealthy, not our family, but a relatively wealthy area, white suburbia, and there's divorce all over the place. And so the family has collapsed, fatherly authority has collapsed, you know, the feminism issue. I think we're struggling with fatherly authority in the church. And so I think a lot of this is not just, you know, going 1,000%. I think it's coming from this. I tweeted recently. I think one thing many of our bishops are misunderestimating. That's George W. Bush's term. Sorry. that's dating me. That one of the things they're underestimating is that men, especially, I think have a very, like when I meet a bishop, I love kneeling and kissing their ring. There's something that comes
and
alive.
And they probably recoil.
I'm sorry?
They probably recoil because...
Well, the ones I have been great. Bishop. But my point is that if these bishops showed bravery and courage, more of them, and some of them have, but they will find a lot of men rising up. And it's because there actually is this natural desire for godly authority that all of us have. And I think when many of these younger people, including myself and maybe some of you guys, when what we've grown up is so often disordered authority, we perhaps veer too strongly toward, you know, finding an authority figure and treating it like some diktat, like every little thing they say becomes some sort of diktat. I'm going to turn my camera off really quick and fix this lighting problem, but that's my 2 cents.
Trent, do you have a way to gauge especially the younger crowd, what aspect of Catholic answers they're gravitating towards? Like, is there a way for you to see like what groups are coming in? You guys have no way of measuring that.
Well, we have ways of measuring it. I'm just still trying to focus on my particular content. I'm bad at creating it in a format that like Gen Z prefers. I'm bringing on more people now who are good at that. Right now I'm bringing on that one Catholic girl to take what I'm doing and she makes TikTok, shorts for me. And Thomas, our social media guy, Catholic Answers, he's Gen Z and he's really hooked into everything that's going on. So I think what we provide is still very relevant. I think what they like seeing are things that are packaged in a way that's easy to receive, especially like, hey, here's someone being anti-Catholic on TikTok. What's the quick response to that? Like just getting the answers we give, but in a very efficient and memorable way that's got a little bit of an edge to it, that's not trying too hard, that's not cringe, I guess. So I think Catholic Answers still skews like millennial and older.
Yeah.
I think it's about the medium, right?
I was just going to say,
Catholic Answers began, it was radio. Yeah, radio, as radio. That's a boomer thing, man. And we're still reaching a ton of people that way. But it took, I mean, our YouTube presence, like you look at the Catholic Answers YouTube page, for years, it was just like a little storage closet with a camera set up on it until they finally, a few years ago, invested into a solid studio. But even there, we really didn't really hook into the Gen Z crowd until we hired Thomas to be our social media, because we had social media managers before that just they use social media as here, I'll share it on these platforms, but not in a way that like the guy who runs like the Wendy's account on Twitter and like has sick burns for people.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have an idea of, as millennials, especially and older, we had no idea of social media being used in that way. And I think for us, we're using Gen Z, we're learning more in that way to reach people.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. Look, we're talking about like young people being addicted to their phones. Dude, I'm addicted to my phone. Like,
oh, totally.
I have Twitter brain. Like, even before we were coming on this show, usually, you don't want to know what it is? Usually, before we have a guest on, it's weird because as the show's progressed, it's gotten a little different. Like when we first started interviewing, like every interview, I'd be like, oh my God, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? Then it kind of got a little easier, but I would just try to have like an initial idea to start with and then just kind of go where the conversation was. Tonight, I found myself like drawing a blank. Like what? Like I had absolutely no plan for where this conversation would go. And I was just like, you know what? If the four of us sat down for lunch together, we'd figure something out to talk about, right? So, I mean, we'll figure it out, you know? But it's just strange that my brain has been that effective on my stupid phone, man. I think I need to do a social media detox, and I think you'll all agree with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I took the browser off my phone, but I still cheat and find a way to get on the internet. But I've been working really hard to try to, like, put it away when I'm at home. It stinks because for my job, like, I have to check things on the internet and research and see what's going on, see what's happening with people. But mostly I get embarrassed. Like, I don't want to do that around my kids. So it takes a conscious effort. I really don't know what's harder to quit, like phones and social media or cigarettes. I think they might be more addicting.
I can tell you, I quit cigarettes. I can't quit the stupid phones. So.
I think it's more addicting, honestly.
100%. Well, what's funny is you see people, like, I'll see guys who are on Twitter all day long talk about how people who play video games are like children. And it's like, dude, you tweet every 5 minutes and you're getting the same exact dopamine response that somebody playing video games is getting, except they're actually interacting a little bit. I don't play video games, but I think it's a weird exception people make for themselves and their own behavior when they're looking at like all of us are just constantly hit with these little dopamine hits. Like, yeah. Josh, you actually read a lot. I have a hard time reading. I have to do like audiobooks and stuff. I can't even sit and read a book anymore. It's terrible.
Well, part of that, I mean, I love to learn, but another thing I'd encourage people to consider is I was really thankful my parents encouraged me to go into music and to do classical piano at a high level. You have to be in a room on your own for many hours a day. I mean, at my height, I guess you could say, I was,
that would drive Anthony literally insane.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I also think it's a spiritual discipline. Pascal had a phrase, something to the effect of, all the world's problems would be solved if people could sit for an hour in silence by themselves, something like that. Of course, he's engaging in hyperbole, but yeah, being able to sit in a room quietly, you know, these thoughts are very unrefined because I'm thinking about it a lot, but I just met Classical Theist today over text. We've been connected over Twitter, and I think he has a lot of helpful things to say. I don't agree with everything he says, but
the need to put that caveat though? Like, we do it with everyone. It's like, I'm having Trent on. I don't agree with everything he says. Like, why do we have to do that nowadays? It's a weird thing.
Well, I feel like a lot of people, and I hate when, well, people will do this, and I try hard to call them out when it happens. They'll use guilt by association, especially if they're online a bunch and they're kind of part of the polemics, like, I'm a left cat, I'm a trag cat, I'm a this, I'm a that. And they'll do, so they'll say, for example, like, Scott Hahn is friends with Bishop Strickland, and look what Strickland did, or Strickland's with this person, he did that, and that means Scott Hahn is just as bad. They'll do like 6 degrees of separation, and it's like, then they're just as bad as that third person in the chain. Like, how can you listen to Scott Hahn? And those same people will say that to me. I'm like, dude, look at the people that Father James Martin associates with, right? and then the people they associate with. But you don't say he's as bad as the people who openly outright reject the church's teaching on marriage and sexuality. To me, I would have more respect if they, I don't, if they're going to do guilt by association, do it with everybody. But it's a tool that gets used a lot against the group of people you really dislike. And so it's like, let's just stop it already.
Yeah. No, completely agree. But so we were talking and I was saying that, I don't know. I think it's kind of reflecting on Postman and the technological revolution we've gone through as a species the last 100 years or so. I'm increasingly open, maybe even convinced, that this state is very unnatural, and I'm not sure we can be accommodated to it without something like transhumanism, like what Elon Musk wants to do. I don't think we're built by God to be connected to virtually anybody at virtually any time. Especially with a globalized world where there are no time zones because of that. Yeah. And so I think it's very unnatural. I think it's something we have to, it's gravely serious because, you know, St. Francis de Sales says in Introduction to the Devout Life, we should do absolutely everything we can to maintain our spiritual peace. And so if X or Facebook or Instagram or avoiding Babylon is causing you to lose your spiritual peace, stop. And guess what? We don't all have to be equally good at everything. So anyway, I hope all of us think about this more because, you know, I forget what it's called, the Apple device, the glasses thing, the virtual reality thing. You know, Apple goggles. I'm not going to do that. That's a red line for me.
Yeah, but Josh, you say that's your line, right? And we're all like, I'm not getting the chip in my head, but we carry the stupid thing around with us everywhere, right?
Well, I've put all sorts of rules in place for myself with my phone. So, and I need to get better at it sometimes, absolutely. Yeah. But so far it's been working pretty well. And again, I love to read. So most of my day I actually do spend reading, writing, and researching. But regardless of where different people are, I've got lots of improvement to make. Regardless of where people are, one of the points Postman made was that he's not a Luddite, which is, I'm forgetting the first name of the guy, but an English guy who was basically saying technological advancement
Ned Ludd.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, we don't know if he was a real person. He might just be an amalgamation, but
fair enough.
Yeah.
But the point being that he's not a Luddite, meaning he's not saying that technological advancement is bad per se, but he does say we need to be aware of how a technological advancement changes us. And that's the thing that many people are, we just kind of assume that an advancement in technology is automatically good or cool or whatever. So for me, this goggle thing, absolute red line. I think we as a species are far too disconnected from reality as it is. And I think that goggle thing will make it infinitely worse. And so anyway, I think we all need to be thinking about these things. And
with every technology that comes, you lose something too, right? Even if something as simple as the lighter, like we used to know how to start a fire with a stick, you know, and then all of a sudden somebody invents the lighter. And now that knowledge of how to do that thing is gone, right? We used to, dude, before GPS, I used to have the entire five boroughs of New York City in my head because I had to drive location to location and I used the road map and I used to have to plot my route. Now that we have GPS, I forgot how to get places that I've been 150 times. It's a really strange thing. As these new technologies are coming in, we're losing something along the way every single time.
Which is why medieval students would remember whole books of scripture. But we have Google search and the incentive structure of, there's many wonderful things about Google search, but one of the things that we do lose is retention, you know?
Well, even when I find that, like, I'm arguing with somebody about scripture online, I don't have to actually know what verse and what book, chapter and verse it is, because I can just Google a few words of the phrase I remember and that'll bring it up. And then I can punch it out like that, where I used to remember, it's like, okay, if you want to get to the obedience of faith, it's Romans 8:17. Like, I just know that because I just looked that one up, but like, because I was in an argument with somebody, but I used to know these things like well by heart, you know? And even what you were talking about with us in this global world like that, it used to be where if you were having an issue in a place, you could take your family and move somewhere else and that issue would go away, where you can't even move to like the middle of the country and escape some of the crap that's going on now. You see in the Midwest, in the heartland of America, these kids are being pumped with this ideology, and you have kids that are actually identifying on that rainbow spectrum, and they're in the Midwest with their, that's supposed to be like, you know, the heartland of America, where you're not near the stuff in the cities, and it's just crazy where we are right now.
Yeah, other Paul, you're right, and it may be a while before you hear me say that again, but I'm kidding. But I completely agree with you. Yeah, about the red line.
So what do you think, what are you saying that you don't think it's possible without some kind of integration with like with technology? Like, you
think I don't think we as a species can keep up with this trend line without transhumanism. So that's my burgeoning conviction. I'm not like setting my flag there. And I'm very much against transhumanism. I mean, I was raised on Star Trek. We hate the Borg. they're the worst enemy ever. But the most dehumanizing. I don't think it works without. We're not meant to be this guy. And frankly, and I'd love to hear Trent's thoughts on this in particular. Mm. It's led to deeply disordered spiritualities when it comes to church politics. You know, because as you and I we've talked about, most people wouldn't have known who the Pope was, who the cardinals were. Like most Catholics through most of history wouldn't hear about almost any of it. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be aware of things, but yeah.
You get stuck in a rage cycle.
Yeah.
And I think anger, it's an addictive emotion. I mean, anger is a good emotion when there's an injustice. Like anger spurs us to do something. So it's no wonder it gives us a little dopamine hit to encourage us to want to do something that's difficult. But it's just so easy for it to become manipulated or distorted or abused. So, that's why I'm really... I'm always concerned that, I mean, that's why, like, I appreciate like Josh, what you're doing with apologetics and what you guys are doing on Avoiding Babylon. Like I do think people are getting a fatigue, hopefully, of Catholic media being tabloid. Like, hey, here's the latest bad thing that's happened. I mean, I think that got a lot of steam. That felt like it picked up a lot. I don't know, like 2017.
It was the Summer of Shame. Summer of Shame, it picked up and everybody went crazy with it. And, you know, a lot of new guys jumped in the field and it was like, it really did.
Well, like for a while, we had like Church Militant, for example, although before that it was Real Catholic TV. Then they had to change the name. And then like, but for a while it was just like, you know, well, I just remember, I'm sure if you were a young Catholic back in like the late 90s, for you, like, sedevacantism was just like, oh, yeah, I heard this. I think there's a Pope.
I never even heard of it. Trent, I never heard of the Society. I never heard of sedevacantism. Yeah. I never heard of the Latin Mass until Summorum Pontificum, I think.
Yeah. But even, like, in the mid, like, the 2000s, if there were people that were talking about bad stuff going on in the church, it was like, okay, man, whatever. But then through the constant repetition of the cycle and just pushing it out there, people... And also through the platform development, through the change of the democratization of media, where instead of just, hey, you've got three Catholic magazines and EWTN, anybody's got a channel. And if you can create salacious content, you'll get people. It creates that kind of negative feedback loop to always try to push people's dopamine receptors and their buttons. But I think
it also creates, think about the incentive structure. You claim that you don't want these things to happen in the church, but every time something bad happens, it's kind of good for your channel. And it's like, oh man, the church is falling apart, but I'm being successful, because it's a very warped incentive structure where trying to find a balance where like you don't harp on that stuff and just kind of have interesting conversations is very difficult, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of the, like, I caught a couple of people said to me, like, they accused me of kissing your ass last time you came on.
Nice.
And I'm like, if you guys think I'm gonna have somebody on and have like this adversarial conversation with them, like, you guys are missing what we're doing here. Like, that's just not, I'm not gonna have somebody come on and try to sandbag them. And
he only does that with co-sleeping. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a good sign that Rob's bringing up co-sleeping. That makes me feel it's truly resolved. The co-sleeping.
Oh, it's resolved.
Yeah. Long ago.
But yeah, it's this weird thing where it just creates this really warped incentive structure. Like, I was joking around before the last Dignitatis Infinita came out, like before it came out, I was like, this is like the Catholic podcaster's wet dream, right? It's like, you guys are getting yourselves all where, oh man, they're going to come out with something on human dignity and everybody's getting all excited. It's like, that's such a warped way to see the church, the magisterium, everything. And there is something to be said about having a hermeneutic of suspicion. I mean, you know, to use Michael Lofton's phrase, there's something warped about having that, yeah, where you don't want to be waiting for the next mistake the church makes.
Well, that's why what's funny is, like, for myself, like what I've been focusing on in my work, like, I mean, I talked a little bit about stuff going on in the church, like in 2018, 2019, back when Council of Trent was just an audio podcast. But then eventually I settled more into, I just really want to focus on showing the faith is true and just really focusing on things and a lot of other people are doing. So, you know, so when it comes to a lot of these other issues that come up, like Trent, what are you going to say about traditionis custodias? Like, I don't really feel like saying anything. People don't need to know my opinion. Or fiducia supplicans, I was planning not to say anything about that because I'm like, look, a ton of people are. But then, like, Ben Shapiro, like, reached out to me and was like, hey, you want to come on the show and talk about it? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I'd rather have someone come on who's not going to, like, completely throw Pope Francis under the bus or something like that. You know, but or like Dignitatis, I was like, I'll wait. I'll see if there's something like I'll wait to see if, like, there's people are banging on my door saying, please say something.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'm like, I don't need to, really.
Well, I've noticed like a lot of so I saw this today with Mike Lewis accusing, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Sachin Rose, or is that am I pronouncing
Sachin it? Joe, you mean?
Sachin Joe. Okay, I'm terrible with
the Indian stuff. Content creator.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Mike Lewis was like,
good guy.
You've been posting things about John Paul II and Benedict XVI. You haven't said anything about Francis. Do you even think he's a valid pope anymore? I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, wow. What? Like, now not saying something positive about Francis implies that you're, like, crypto-schismatic or something? It's a very weird thing going on where even to be silent and not be pro-Francis, you're going to get accusations from someone from somewhere at some point. That's a lot, you know, the whole point of what I was saying.
You create this polarization where it's like, as long as they're on my team, then they're great. And if you don't support the team, it's a distorted view of the world. It's like seeing Austin Ivory today saying, like, oh, we need to, he said, we need to keep Rupnik's art up and you can't hold the art. You can't blame the art for the artist. And I'm like, that's insanity. That's even at least on the left. They're just like, that's crazy talk, but it's because he's on your team. Yeah. Whereas, like, I know that there are other people that I'm sure Ivory would say that if it was a conservative person or a conservative media thing, and to say there was scandal involved, oh, take it all down. The only reason he would say that is because Rupnik's on the team, and I'm like, it's just mind blowing to me.
Yeah, I see that. I see that in all corners too, man. It's
The right, the trads will do the same thing as long as But hey, they're trad. We can't say anything bad about them. Like, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. All right, I want to make sure I get a plug in for Eternal Christendom and Council of Trent. So, Josh, what do you have going on? And then we're going over to locals and we're going to discuss Fuentes, because I know everybody wants us to discuss Fuentes. And we're going to actually talk about the Groypers, and we're going to talk about Fuentes, because I probably have some things that I agree a little more. A couple of the points Nick made in his response to you that I was like, all right, that's a fair point. So we're going to go over to locals. We're going to discuss Fuentes, Christ the King, maybe Lila Rose a little bit. Going to be all the juicy stuff over there that you guys got to pay for to come and see. But Josh, what's going on with Eternal Christendom? Do you have anything lined up coming up that you can promote, or is just the one podcast?
Yeah, people just want to go to eternalchristendom.com. We just announced like a month ago, and I just posted the first podcast. It's kind of a prologue, just explaining the backstory. But no, essentially the goal is kind of responding to this postman reality that we're living in, of electronic media kind of dumbing things down and making the most digital and visual generation in history. You know, all this stuff is the stuff that built our civilization. It's the stuff that formed saints, sages, and statesmen. And it built the civilization that all of us in varying degrees and in various ways love and want to preserve. Unfortunately though, virtually all these books are just text on a page, which is fine for me. I'm a nerd, and I'm sure there's some nerds on this stream and on the in the comments. But for most people, especially these days, that's not going to work for three basic reasons. One, hyper digital. Two, hyper visual. And three, nobody today, they're cultural orphans. So there's no context. I mean, I have multiple versions of these classics where there's virtually no context provided for anything. And it's totally unacceptable. And so we basically want to take these things and not only make them the most beautiful, explanatory, deep books ever made, but we want to basically use these things to QR code every chapter into a whole digital universe where you can be, you know, when you're reading something, a letter of St. Ignatius of Antioch, you can be connected to a Trent Horn video on the Eucharist or a Scott Hahn documentary on this, or you can be watching a trailer. Like, I want to get filmmakers to do Hollywood level trailers about St. Ignatius of Antioch or about his martyrdom. There are so many tools we have today.
So interesting, man. Like, even
to bring the physical and the digital together to reach a highly digital visual generation.
Well, yeah. Because even like I was saying before, like, I could do audiobooks and stuff. Like, I'm so excited to be able to drive in my car and just click a link to listen to something about, like, you got to realize people's attention spans are kind of wired towards this medium now. So I'm really happy you're doing that, man.
Yeah. Well, people don't know. There's almost no version of the church fathers there is no version. So imagine if there was a version of the church fathers. The first one we're going to do is St. Ignatius of Antioch's letters. So you have seven letters and we're going to make it gorgeous. I have a wonderful illustrator friend. He's actually Protestant, but through this whole process, he's become way more open to the Catholic faith. Yeah. It's been really interesting. But we want to use him, my friend Burritus Catholic, you know, Chris Lewis. We want to use him to create highly symbolic catechetical art. There's so many concepts like apostolic succession or original sin versus being in a state of grace that we can use art to conceptually explain to a vision, but it's not being done. I'm not going to mention other apostolates on here, not Trent's, of course, but I think there are some apostolates who are doing this, but I don't think they're going nearly far enough. So imagine if you had a version of the fathers that was basically explaining how Catholic they are and how they point to the Catholic faith and they tell the Catholic story. I think
we don't want the slanted redeemed Zoomer version.
well, and people can read. So sorry, I don't want to monopolize. So I'll just say, we really need, in my opinion, dialectic can only go so far, meaning logic, argument. That's extremely important. It's our highest nature. That's what makes us human, okay? But maybe this comes from my music side. We need pathos, the emotional side of things. We need to grip people by beauty. That is what the church has done century after century after century. And if you can't get people through that way, you're not going to get people. But what is missing in apologetics is storytelling and, in my opinion, a lot of civilizational scope. Jesus Christ came into the world when 2% of human beings had ever been alive, and since that time, 98% of human beings have been alive, and he came to, you know, when the Roman Empire brought three continents together, he brought together the highest of revealed religion, of reason and philosophy and civilization and institutions and law from Rome, Israel, Greece, and Rome. And it created the greatest, not perfect, lots of problems, but the greatest civilization that has ever existed. That's a story we need to tell. And yes, I want people to stop being Protestant. I want it's a false religion. I want people to come to the Catholic faith, but I don't want it. I don't want to own Protestants. I want to tell Protestants, this is your heritage. I don't know how you can be in favor of Western civilization if you're leaving out 1500 years plus of it, which most Protestants tend to do. That's kind of how I was raised. So, I want an apologetics that is using all the tools we have for beauty in the physical and the digital realm, bringing them together. And I want an apologetics that's fundamentally about telling a story at a civilizational scale. So that's what
I knew I should have opened with asking you about Eternal Christendom because, dude, this is like, I think the best way to convince people of Catholicism is actually by seeing the church through history, seeing how the church spreads and seeing how God's spirit covers the earth. It's like it comes into this pagan world and God's spirit just subdues the earth. And these, I can't say the S word because we got a strike last time, but these barbarians
Careful.
The barbarians who were performing human sacrifice just get subdued by God's spirit, and Catholicism in its heyday just really transforms the face of the earth. It's such an awesome topic to get into, man.
Well, that, Josh, as a Protestant, I was reading the Church Fathers, and I was seeing so many incredible stories about the demonic being battled by Catholic priests, or relics pushing back the demonic. Or, I mean, St. Augustine is using historical apologetics all the time. Mm-hmm. He's saying to the Jews and the heretics and schismatics, to the Donatists, whatever, guys, this was all prophesied in the Old Testament. You're seeing the pagan altars fall and the Catholic altars go up. Oh, and by the way, there's prophecies of all you heretics and schismatics who are separating from the church as well. You see it in Judah and Israel. You know, and he, so he go, it's an extremely historical storytelling apologetic. And the, he has this image. He says, basically, what we've seen is the most powerful leader of the most powerful empire in the history of the world. He's talking about pagan Roman emperors. And they've gone from persecuting Christians to now, by their laws, helping spread the Christian faith. And the most powerful emperor is now kneeling at the tomb of the fishermen in Rome. Yeah. These are stories and images that we need to tell people, that whether they like it or not. This is the church and the faith that built the civilization they want to maintain. And unless they get that, they're not going to get Western civilization or anyway. So I could go on, but
So that was Chris's tweet, cryptic tweet the other day, Josh, that he's going to be doing work for you guys.
Oh, did he?
He tweeted something about starting a new big project. So.
No, we haven't talked too much yet. We still have more of a budget to raise, honestly. Fair enough. So, but no, we've got a lot of people we're talking to, have a lot of really impressive people on the advisory board. We just announced Eric Ibarra today. I love Eric.
Is Trent on there? What's going on with Trent? Trent, you on the advisory board or what?
Anthony. We're still asking to say that. Oh my gosh.
I'll get him in there for you, Josh. Don't worry about it.
You're so inappropriate.
Wait. I see Miss B in here. And that reminds me, Trent.
Yeah.
Naivete, not naive. Naivete.
I forget what I even said in that.
I watched your video and you were talking about the Nala thing and Miss B, and you read naivete as naive. I'm like, no.
That is,
I'm of all the people to correct Trent.
We'd love to have Trent on, and we'll see what happens. I deeply admire his work. So we'll see what happens.
You don't want someone with so much naivete. As
you said it. Nice. Join. I'll tell you the Miss B and Nala whole discourse. Like, obviously, Pearl is just whatever. But whenever I found myself like thinking I had something to add, it would have been something that I would have had to point the mirror at myself so much. Like, anything I see that's I would have just been all of us are struggling with this temptation right now of attention. Like, we want our attention. I mean, I have a podcast. I'm trying to get people to see me. And I found myself unable to even have a criticism that I wouldn't be able to lob at myself that I was guilty of. And it's like, if whoever is without sin cast the first stone. And that was really like what struck me about that whole situation. I was like, I can't say anything here, because anything I accuse anybody of, I'm 100% guilty of.
No, that's good self-awareness. And that's why I said, like, not everyone has to have a take on everything. And just seeing all that, mostly what I just wanted to have is, I'm always just trying to put forward, how do we lower the obstacles and the barriers that keep people from Christ and his church? And if you're going to put up a barrier, if you're going to make something difficult for someone, you better have really overriding evidence that it's necessary for the well-being of others, and not just because you think it's a hot take.
Well, not just that, you have to remember when your conversion happens, how excited you are and how much you want to share that.
Yeah.
Like, you just want to share that with people. It's like, how can you expect somebody whose whole life gets transformed, they go from living one way and then they're actually a different person living a different life, and expect them to not want to tell people about it? It's almost an unrealistic expectation.
Yeah, it's a double standard, too, to be like, oh, these former OnlyFans models, now they're just grifters. They've got a new thing to get attention. But then if you hear... But a lot of the, but I feel like a lot of it is, no, you just consider them more detestable than other sinners. Mm-hmm. Like if you hear like, you know, those testimonies from like former gang members or like people are in like British gangs and stuff and have found, oh, I found Jesus. Now I used to crack people over the head with my, and then, you know, and then now I talk about Jesus, like, oh, that's really good. Or even like a former Protestant pastor who now like teaches theology somewhere. And it like most people aren't like, what a grifter. It's like, yeah. So it's like you want to just give everybody a fair shake.
Yeah. And give them, I think there probably are, like, I did like that Miss B told her story in written form, right? I think that there's probably better outlets to do things on. But the Nala thing, it was weird because, like, she's not even Catholic. And it became such a Catholic conversation. It's like, all right, you know, like I'd much rather hear Ms. B's story than Nala's story. You know what I mean?
But it's new. It's a news item, like a famous person. Though I think, like, and that's why I said in all my, both in my older video on celebrity conversions and in this one, yeah, you should celebrate people, but you should have prudence. Like, if someone's a brand new convert, you don't just put them out on the convert speaking tour. Like, you gotta let they need some time to get adjusted.
Josh, didn't somebody give you advice like that?
Yeah, Scott Hahn. I had a number of opportunities to write conversion memoirs right away. And I was leaning against it, but I was excited by it. But I talked with Scott and he recommended being in the church at least 5 years before doing it. And I think it was some of the best advice I've ever been given. And you have to live the faith. It has to become part of your being. And of course, being a Catholic, that's a process that continues until the day you die. So
yeah, I think I was Catholic for about, I started working at Catholic Answers, I think it was about 11 years after my conversion.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about why me and Rob are cradle Catholics, and that's much better than being a convert, but
there's still prayers I can't learn. My wife and her family will say them, and I'm like, I don't know. Praise word of the Lord. That's right.
All right. We're going to jump over to Locus. I have a lot of ideas. Amongst,
right, Anthony?
It is amongst. If you say among, you're actually not even technically part of the church. So it's blessed art thou amongst women. And anybody who says among, you're actually kind of schismatic. So readjust your prayer life and start saying thou, thy. Can't say blessed are you among women. Mary only hears prayers in Victorian English, and God only hears prayers in Latin. That's the truth.
Ba-dum-tsh.
All right, we're gonna sign over. We're gonna go over there. We're gonna get into some of the juicier topics. We will see you guys on Thursday with Jay Dyer. I have Jay Dyer coming on. I'm gonna tell him why he is LARPing as an ortho bro, and he needs to come home to Rome.
Yeah, it's gonna go over real well.
Good luck.
Real well. Have fun. All right, you guys stay where you are. We're gonna jump over to the other side.